On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
I hope that you have donned your best monkey suits and glad rags, because it is time for the most coveted, least coveted awards in all of politics. That's right, it is the On The Record End of Year Awards for 2020. And I'm delighted to say we have the political correspondent of the journal.ie, Christina Finn, with us, and also on the line, the Ireland editor of independent newspapers, Fionnán Sheehan, to guide us through the runners and riders for these most highly coveted of unwanted awards. Thank you both for coming in. Hope you've all had a lovely Christmas. We will start, because it's always nice to talk about those who have fallen off their high horse in the course of the year, and it is a long shortlist, Christina, of nominees for the political fall or failure of the year. And there are plenty of people we could talk about, because there's so many people who have lost their jobs either in the Dáil or in Cabinet. There's Dara Cailleary, Barry Cowan, Joe McHugh, Regina Doherty, Joan Burton, Timmy Dooley, Shane Ross, Phil Hogan, Brian Stanley. There's plenty of people who have had fairly high profile failures this year.
Absolutely plenty, and I'm sure everybody in Leinster House is tuning in to find out who is going to get this nomination this year. But I had looked over the list, and there was quite a few gaffes and falls from grace over the last year. But I went with Dara Cailleary with the whole Golfgate fiasco. I felt, you know, when you talk about people who had a particularly bad run of it this year, Dara Cailleary, I think, comes top of my list in terms of, first of all, being snubbed from cabinet nominations at the very beginning from Micheál Martin, and then finally getting that opportunity to become a minister following the I suppose, the unfortunate circumstances of his colleague.
Yeah.
And then falling from grace again over an unfortunate choice that he made in terms of attending the Golfgate dinner. And I think most people who do know Dara Cailleary around Leinster House only tend to have good things to say from him. So I think it was a particularly poignant fall from grace for somebody like himself. I think we can all kind of look over lists of gaffes and things that are very much of their own doing, and I think this is very much one of them. But I think it's somebody who very much will look back over the year and just put their head in their hands and wonder where it all went wrong.
Yeah, there's a fairly crowded list of runners and riders for this one, Fionnán, and I know that in your own short list, because there are so many people to consider, that you didn't even have Dara Cailleary on your podium.
No, I think out of the Golfgate issue, the Phil Hogan is certainly the name that stands out for me. I mean, the manner in which the government effectively went after him made it all the more dramatic. And you had that scenario where a government was expressing no confidence in a European commissioner. It's all the more significant. The other two for me was Joe McHugh in the cabinet. I mean, at a time when the government's, the then caretaker government's ratings were going up quite substantially and people's careers were being rejuvenated, namely
Simon Harris
and Leo Varadkar in particular. Joe McHugh and the Leaving Cert issue did stand out as an area that they really got badly wrong. So that's, I think, as a cabinet member, when everybody else was going up, his estimation was coming down. And also Barry Cowan for the drink driving issue.
Yeah, of course, the story that you broke in the Irish Independent.
Well, it's more the timing of it is, yeah, as Christina has said, Dara Cailleary is snubbed. Barry Cowan is in cabinet and very much, you're looking down the track going, okay, Micheál Martin will effectively be gone in 2.5 years. Who are the contenders to become the next leader of Fianna Fáil? And Barry Cowan would very much been on that list. A week in, this drink driving issue that he didn't deal with for the previous 4 years emerged. And then two, three weeks later, he's dismissed by the Taoiseach, which is a very, very rare event in Irish politics. That's why I have those three down on the list.
For me, actually, the standout one, I think it's one of the Golfgate ones, but I think for me it's Phil Hogan, because if you think back to the circumstances of why he found himself hounded out, obviously you had Dara Cailleary, and I agree, Christina, everyone has only nice things to say about Dara Cailleary, and everyone felt very sorry that a guy who'd had to wait for his turn cabinet got thrown out. But Phil Hogan, I think had he been more forthcoming about that whole thing of where was he and was he observing his 14 days of self-isolation and was he in the K Club or was he in Kilkenny, I think had he come out and been transparent on day one, it might have been a pretty bad look, but I think he probably would have gotten away with it. But instead it was this situation where he said, no, no, I completely fulfilled all of my quarantine. I fulfilled all of the local rules. And then it turned out that he hadn't. And then suddenly his story was changing to say, well, actually, they don't apply for me because I was able to take a test and prove myself negative anyway, and then tried to get away with it. I think it was an example of how if he had just been forthcoming in the first place, he would have been all right. But it was the manner in which he tried to evade the, you know, being totally forthcoming about things, the fact that he told European Commission spokespersons that he had completed his 14 days when in fact he hadn't, and then he changed his story. It was the contorted explanation of where he all was, and then that found himself suddenly on the wrong side of a government. To me, that stands out as being the big political failure of this year. Fiona, I'm going to let you have the final choice on this one. If we were to pick one political failure of the year, who would it be for you?
Well, I think Christina's on Golfgate, you're on Phil Hogan, I'd have him on my shortlist. So if anything, that's a bizarre one as well, because ultimately a week later it emerged that MEPs, when they were coming travelling to and from Brussels and Strasbourg, if they were coming back into Ireland, they could get a test, and therefore after a couple of days they could circulate. So it was kind of a classic example of just a convergence of events just overtaking what the original incident was. So yeah,
I think 100%. If he had come out just a little earlier and explained it, even said, "Oh, I thought this was the rules. This is the way we've been operating in Europe. This is the way I was told to do things." I think people underestimate how much the public might have perhaps just let him off the hook with that. But I think the drip feed of information just never serves anybody well in a political scandal like itself.
I would hope that in 2021, we're just around the corner in a couple of days' time, we're not going to regret the removal of such a powerful figure that Ireland had sitting at around the table in the EU. Once Brexit unfurls and other developments come down the track in terms of budgeting and how the EU develops post Brexit, we might end up looking back at this one going, that wasn't the Brexit.
Well, I suppose it's the fact that he climbed such a high mountain and he held such high office in the European Commission that makes his fall all the more dramatic. Phil Hogan, the political fall of the year 2020, perhaps not quite as coveted as the George Foreman grill that he managed to get in Clifton, but nonetheless another award to put in his mantelpiece as we all look into 2021. A political speech of the year, not quite as many standout incidents, and again we're talking about domestic political speeches here, but there are a few. There's Leo Varadkar's speech, prefacing the lockdown on Patrick's Day, where he talked about cocooning. There was Micheál Martin's acceptance speech when he finally became Taoiseach. There was his lockdown exit speech a couple of weeks back when he was looking forward till Christmas. There was perhaps the budget speech. You could argue that there was also, you know, the speech that he made on the night of the first Dáil sitting. There was Holly Kearns a few weeks back talking about being called a silly girl. Fiona, I'll let you take the lead on this. Where do you think we are?
Yeah, there's another one that really stands out for me, and it's a double header, and that is going back to February, the first night that the Dáil sat, inconclusive in terms of delivering a Taoiseach, and a lot of uncertainty at the time about who would go in with each other and so on. And Micheál Martin stood up in the Dáil that night, and he really went all out in terms of setting out why he would not touch Sinn Féin with a barge pole. He basically said they don't operate to the same democratic standards held by every other party in this place. And Mary Lou MacDonald retorted quite forcefully as well. And the TDs who were in the Dáil chamber that night said you could literally hear the pin drop. Now, albeit there's a lovely blue naffin carpet on the floor, so you can't hear many pins drop. But it was just a real moment in politics, where you just saw two people at the top of their game, Mary Lou after the election result, and Micheál heading into the Taoiseach's office, ultimately still the favourite at that point, setting out their stall on each other. And it ruled out any prospect of Fianna Fáil, slim at all as it was, going in with Sinn Féin, and ruled in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael going in with each other.
I'd actually forgotten about that one pre-COVID and the COVID malaise of things.
That at one point the Dáil was actually meeting in Leinster House with a full chamber.
Exactly.
Like, that's how foreign that idea seems.
Yeah, but those two speeches I actually remember quite well being in the chamber, and definitely there was that, you know, hair standing on your arm sort of moment where you wondered what was going to happen next, and everyone sort of heads jerking back and forth, looking at each other, retort at each other. But I think it was very clear after that that there certainly wasn't going to be any sort of love between Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil at that point.
Would that be your standout political speech of the year, Christine?
I actually went with the Leo Varadkar one outside Blair House in Washington, D.C., just because I had actually sort of been there at the time covering
So this is the morning of March 12th where he announces the first level of shutdown, the closure of schools and the likes.
Yeah, and the night before it had been, Trump had called the end for international flights and we were at the Irish president or the Ireland Funds dinner.
Yes, yeah.
And there was a lot of, I think Leo Varadkar had sort of left the room abruptly and we had kind of assumed that it was about the whole Trump issue and the flights issue, but actually it was to do with what was going to come the next day and the speech that they had to be done overnight. And, you know, press conference very early in the morning. And I just remember discussing back with the news team in the journal and them being saying, trying to feed in about the atmosphere that was over here in Ireland and it being a completely different set of scenario in the US, you know, after.
Because it must have been very serene. That was about like 6 o'clock in the morning in Washington or 7 a.m. And it must have felt like when you were totally away from all of the hysteria about, oh God, there's a speech coming, that it just must have felt like a day's work for you, but that you weren't caught up in the whole frenzy of what it meant back home.
Yeah, I think being there and hearing the words and going, God, this is huge, schools closing and all the rest back home and absolute, you know, seemed to be a bit of chaos back home in terms of what people didn't know what to do. And then all the journalists sort of packing up outside the White House and going, where are we going to file? We go to a coffee shop. They're, you know, everyone just getting about their business in the US. And it was a total, I think, you know, descent from reality in terms of what was happening back home in Ireland. But, you know, I think he delivered that speech, I think, very well in terms of, I think, the uncertainty at home from what I gather from people and not knowing what was coming down the tracks. And I think the magnitude of what was coming, you know, was delivered quite well by him. Nobody could have known, obviously, that we were going to still be discussing this, you know, in Christmas. Well, but
the one thing I remember about that speech in particular, because I was still back home in Dublin, it was the first of what turned out to be an extraordinary number of days where I had to find myself looking down the barrel of a camera, filling for an awful lot of time while we waited for the speech to come in and for all the news to happen. That was something I hadn't ever had to do before 2020, and it's something I've had to do an awful lot.
But I do think that Leo Varadkar sometimes gets accused, his speeches, they can be hit or miss sometimes. Sometimes you don't know whether there's emotion in them enough that there needs to be. And I do think that he did pull that one off quite well.
Well, I think actually another Leo Varadkar one, the one on St. Patrick's Day when we were all sitting at home wondering how much longer this was going to go on for. And I think it was, not only was it pitch perfect for the time of year that it was and for this whole level of still not quite knowing exactly how severe things were going to become. This was obviously before we ever went into full lockdown. It's about a fortnight ahead of that. But what I remember most about Leo Varadkar's speech on St. Patrick's Day was that he introduced the word cocooning to our vernacular. And this was a time when we were wondering about if we were to go into full lockdown, was it going to be the case that older people were simply going to have to batten down the hatches and not see anyone or interact with anybody or have home help or Meals on Wheels? Were they going to be just completely isolated? And even though it might seem like a very superficial or supercilious reading, the idea that the word cocooning was suddenly coming in, it wasn't even shielding, it wasn't isolation. Cocooning made it sound very cozy and very warm, and suddenly just by having that put into the national conversation, I think it meant that what was coming in the following months just suddenly felt a little bit more comforting rather than this being this idea of everyone having to lock themselves away and not see anyone. And I think for that reason, perhaps that one stands out for me. We gave Fiona on the call on the last one. So, Christine, I'm going to let you call this one political speech of the year.
Yeah, I'll go with Leo Varadkar and give him props for that one, I think.
For Patrick's Day or Blair House?
For the Blair House one, I think, for myself. I'm going with my own choice.
Fair enough. Leo Varadkar announcing the closure of schools in Blair House, the political speech of the year 2020 in the On the Record Awards. By the way, a fairly long/short list, but Fiona, I'll let you just make an executive call on international political speech of the year. Is there anything that stands out for you?
It wasn't quite a speech. It was more the manner in which he handled the circumstances. That was Joe Biden in that first debate with Donald Trump, much derided.
Would you ever shut up, man? That wasn't exactly great oratory, was it?
You're still going, no.
To the point.
Not at all. And basically ended up with people saying, look, the moderator didn't manage it terribly well. There were so many interruptions. Nothing came across in terms of policy objectives. But Joe Biden achieved something on that occasion. He showed that he could, in effect, physically stand up to Donald Trump. If you look back 4 years, you saw the manner in which Donald Trump seemed to kind of bully and cajole and intimidate Hillary Clinton in the debates. So what you saw on that occasion was, you know what, Joe Biden was able to kind of get down and dirty and resort to Donald Trump's tactics if he needed to in his own way. So it meant that Trump didn't emerge from that debate in any ways being able to say, well, I'm the strong man. You can't trust this guy. He's pretty weak. So I think that one stands out for me as a result of that.
Okay, not necessarily a moment of great oratory, but nonetheless international political speech of the year, as decided by Fiona Xi and Joe Biden's participation in the first of the U.S. presidential debates. Political story of the year. We're going to have to rattle through some of these because, as with any awards show, the orchestra is already playing its cue and we need to try and rattle on. Political story of the year, not including COVID, because obviously COVID is the story that will end all stories. It could be the story of the century. But the story that's had the biggest impact or influence on the political scene, and there are a few, Christine, that you could go for. I mean, most years, a general election would be the biggest political story. But you could say the coalition and the whole process of forming a coalition afterwards was in itself a big story. You could say that Golfgate and the impact that had was a big story. For you, what is the big political story of the year?
Yeah, I think the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil joining forces, I think, is huge. And I don't think we did cover it, and what did get, I suppose, a lot of attention at the time, but I still don't think it's realised how big it actually is for Irish politics for these two parties to come together. And I think over the last year we've seen, obviously, COVID has perhaps made a difficult scenario for them, or perhaps it might have made them easier because they actually do have to join together. But you do see them fumbling through, I think, over the last year, and every single political moment that we've had, or every single vote that's fallen, or every single story, be it nurses' pay, it does come back to who is performing better in the government and what party is outdoing each other, even though they are in government. Even when we look at the nurses' pay, you know, we have Fianna Fáil TDs saying, how did this fly under our radar? How did we not know that this was going to be a massive issue for us? And them commenting on how Fine Gael are somehow getting away scot-free with things.
Yeah, despite being in government, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, Fiona. I don't know whether I would go with that, because the coalition, I think, it's obviously a very historic moment. I think it could be the political story almost of the century in Ireland, because instead of having, you know, 90 years of these lads tearing lumps out of each other, now we have, you know, potentially decades of these guys working together and a kind of a real realignment across the political spectrum in Ireland. But then I also could be taken by Golfgate and the whole way in which that fell out as well, because it was the one example where there was a clear public appetite that the Irish public were not going to be taken for fools, and we weren't going to allow politicians to try and get away with a slightly less coherent following or adaptation of the rules than we ourselves were going through. The politicians were no different to anyone else and had to live by the same rules that we did. And I actually don't know which of those two is more momentous.
Yeah, and likewise, you although you're bored by it, you have to put in the Brexit negotiations, because it is so
the story of this year and last year and the year before.
Yeah, and potentially for the next decade, and that it will realign our relationship with our nearest neighbours. For me, it is the general election, obviously, from which the formation of the government flowed, and it's just because it was such an election where things got turned on their head for the first time this year, of several times this year. And the manner in which you were looking at it this time last year, going, okay, we're going to have a general election next year at some point, most likely, and probably Micheál Martin is going to come out as Taoiseach. And you look at it back now and you go, okay, well, that's what happened.
Yeah.
But it's not what
not
happened.
Nearly
really,
the way we expect it to be.
Because you ended up with this realignment of Irish politics where you've got the two parties, the two parties that have dominated Irish politics, barely been able to scrape together a government between them and a third party. And that's why I think it is so significant. And ultimately, it shows how unpredictable Irish politics is. Chris McManus is the great example for me. He's now the Sinn Féin MEP
for Midlands North West. Yeah,
he was dropped by Sinn Féin from their general election ticket in Sligo just 2 weeks out from the general election, because they were spooked by Marion Harkin. They thought there was a chance they could lose their a seat. That's remarkable, considering pretty much every Sinn Féin candidate in the country ultimately topped the poll, and they could have won at least another 8 seats if they'd had more candidates in the places where they had had the votes. So I think a dramatic election.
I do think it's remarkable that actually there could be a debate around whether a general election was the big political story of the year, but I think ultimately, because of how momentous it was and the real tectonic plates shifting, I think we have to declare the general election to be political story of the year 2020. Up and coming politician of the year, Fionnán, is one which could again be quite open-ended, because it's been with the year that it was with the general election, there were obviously a huge slew of new blood coming into Dáil Éireann, and the people who were only first time TDs, the likes of Holly Cairns, like we've already mentioned, the likes of Mairead Farrell, who has landed herself very much in a plum job as Sinn Féin's spokesperson on public expenditure when she's only been in the Dáil for 9 or 10 months. But then there are also others who have been languishing for a long time, who now finally hold cabinet office. To your mind, the young up and coming politician of the year.
Yeah, Norma Foley, I suppose, stands out in terms of somebody who has been on the political scene for about 2 decades, but yet at the same time, this time last year, she was teaching down in the President Tralee. She's now the Minister for Education and doing a pretty good job of it in terms of she's got basic things right. Leaving cert, get schools back, get colleges back, and roll from there.
Does that still count kind of even with the grading year. Issue with the Leaving Cert, or does she deserve kudos for the way in which she tackled it head on?
I think ultimately, you know, the grading issue emerged. I mean, if that was as big a thing that happened with the Leaving Cert results, it wasn't exactly the most monumental. It didn't end up with the Leaving Cert results having to be scrapped or the CAO system not happening or any of that. There was going to be glitches. The word glitches, she dealt with them and she moved on. In terms of other non-ministerial office holders, Claire Curran of Sinn Féin, for a couple of reasons. The party viewed her as kind of very much an upcoming star of the future. She was running in Roscommon. She wasn't given much of a hope, and ultimately she kind of symbolised what happened in the general election. She fought off. She took a seat that should have been Fianna Fáil's. Made sure that Fine Gael didn't get a look in there either. Mm. Now on the party's front bench, she's a different style. She's not the shouty Piers Doherty type. She's very deliberative, does her research, good solid performer in that regard. So certainly somebody to watch for the future. And then in Fine Gael, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, again, somebody who arrived late onto the party ticket only 18 months ago. She became a councillor, then a TD, and has been very much a star and outshining many Fine Gael ministers over the past 10 months. So those three all-female tickets, that'd be my selection.
That's a fairly coherent trio all the same. Christina, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm actually going as well for a female trio as well. I think Holly Cairns, I think if you're talking about opposition, political parties, I think she's very savvy in terms of the political stories and issues that she's been picking up, mm-hmm. such as, you know, the Greyhounds issue. Yeah.
Or what she's been doing in the last couple of months inside maternity leave as well, particularly now that Helen McEntee's pregnancy has come to light as well.
Exactly, yeah. And even crossing, I suppose, party lines and speaking out a bit about that with Helen McEntee and what they're going to do to solve mm-hmm. issues that are no doubt going to come down the line as more women hopefully enter into politics. But I just think she really has sort of picked a good few key issues and managed to kind of put herself out there and got the attention, I think, that a lot of those issues deserve. And I think if you're looking as well in terms of, sticking it up to the government, I think Louise O'Reilly and Sinn Féin has, I think, stepped up her game in terms of perhaps being a good opposition TD.
She's been outside of her comfort zone this year as well, because she was a health spokesperson, being in health industrial relations was her background, and then suddenly in the middle of the year she finds herself parachuted into enterprise. She's marking Leo Varadkar, but you think she's done a pretty good job?
Yeah, I think she has, in terms of, you know, she's well able to speak up and pick up the issues, I think, and often find some holes in Leo Varadkar's narrative of what he's trying to put forward. So I do think she has represented the party quite well and shadowing him quite well. And also she has had to come out a number of times batting for the party in very difficult circumstances, particularly around the Brian Stanley tweets. She has been wheeled out a lot on radio programmes to defend those things. And I think, you know, she has been quite a strong person to speak in defence of the party. But I do think if you're talking about Fine Gael, I know Helen McEntee perhaps isn't, you know, such an up-and-comer, but she definitely has leaped and bounded into the Justice Ministry role quite well. she has taken, you know, some very important issues, I think, such as the online image abuse legislation that has been sitting on shelves
How
for
years. How do you think she handled the whole Seamus Wolf issue in hindsight?
Yeah, I think she was handed an absolute.
It's
I was looking.
Pass,
yeah, I was looking at her face, and you could tell that speech was just repeat what's on, just repeat what's on the sheet. Yeah, I think she handled it quite well in the difficult circumstances that she was put in, and you know, as we're heading into the new year, I'm not sure how much that's going to feature again.
One, the very prominent list of female candidates, the one male who I might single out is maybe Jack Chambers, because I think Jack has now found himself, I don't know if he's even turned 30 yet, but he's 29, government chief whip. It means that if Fianna Fáil, you know, do find themselves with another generation coming through, he's likely to get himself a cabinet ministry. And I think it's a guy who has already, you know, made himself a fairly indispensable figure in the Fianna Fáil run bench, despite being at such a young age. Fionnuala, I will let you, though, have the final call. Norma Foley, Claire Curran, Jennifer Carl McNeil, Holly Cairns, Louise O'Reilly, Anna McEntee. Where do you go?
You gotta add in one more, and that's that guy who became Minister for Health on March the 17th. Harris is his name. Don't know what he was doing before that. Doesn't seem to have any track record in politics whatsoever. And did a great job for 3 months on cleaning up on an absolute disastrous mess that was left there by
whoever else left it there for him. Yeah, who knows who that was.
Going to go for Norma Foley on the basis that, you know, she has climbed the highest and the farthest of the people who we mentioned there.
In fairness to the Bell, Simon Harris, he has won this award in previous years. But nonetheless, Norma Foley, up-and-coming politician of the year 2020 in these end-of-year awards. International politician of the year. This is a little bit like best foreign language film, where it's a very, very high-profile award, but they're not really going to be hanging on the end of the seats trying to wait to see who wins it. This is the politician who maximised their impact and their progress for their particular position, not necessarily someone who you agree with. It's a little bit like Time Person of the Year. It's someone who made their mark, irrespective of their thoughts. So in previous years, this would have been the likes of Nigel Farage. Few contenders this time around: Joe Biden, Andrew Cuomo, Angela Merkel, Ursula von der Leyen, closer to home, Boris Johnson, Nicola Sturgeon, Jacinda Ardern on a global scale. Christine, I'll let you take the lead on this one.
I'm going to go with the Governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, a bit of a left field one there, but mainly because I thought that he, you know, represented the people of New York very well early on in the pandemic when I was there in New York in March before the St. Patrick's Day things, and things were really hitting the fan at that point. And watching the news channels, he was just a very forceful, you know, straight down the barrel, looking down the camera, speaking to his constituents and, you know, going up against, I think, federal government and demanding more resources and more help that didn't seem to be coming at the time. So a bit of a left-field one, but I do think he's definitely put his, I suppose, his profile out there a lot more than perhaps some previous governors of New York.
There's a whole giant cast of characters, Fiona, you could choose from. Even Brexit alone, you could populate a whole shortlist with that as well. But then you could go even further and say, well, whatever about Joe Biden, that Kamala Harris has also had an incredible year too.
Yeah, Kamala Harris, for me, I mean, actually becoming the first winning female member of a presidential election ticket, also giving her mixed race background, it's just a very significant figure. The fact, obviously, that she came under greater scrutiny, I think, because there was concerns about people saying, well, is Joe Biden going to last the 4 years, in effect, given his health? Not that he'd die, but that he'd have to stand down at some point. It also makes her the obvious contender to run
for 4 or 8 years time, whatever it is,
in four years, more likely 4 years time. So that's why she came through a very packed field. There was a lot of contenders, and Joe Biden could have gone with a very safe bet there. Instead, he didn't. He put forward somebody with tremendous fortitude and personality, and you can see her growing into that role. I don't think she's going to be one of these kind of backseat vice presidents who we don't hear from really.
Could you make a case for Michel Barnier, because of how everything in the last year has gone, that it was only in December that he finally got the last Brexit deal over the line when the UK decided to ratify that in January, and then with the way everything has gone in the meantime since, you could also certainly argue the case that he has had, you know, a very impactful year, perhaps not on the front lines or a politician per se, but someone who has done his bit. Fiona, and I will let you choose this one, International Politician of the Year.
I'll go with Kamala Harris, and obviously in brackets, Joe Biden
attached to
Joe Biden
that,
being the number two on her ticket. Yeah.
And I think her speech as well at, does deserve a mention, I think. I know we already gave it to the International Speech Award, but I think hers deserves merit also in terms of, you know, speaking out about what her appointment means to a lot of little girls and seeing something in reality.
We're a little bit tight on time, so we'll head straight to the Grand Prix. Politician of the Year. Again, not necessarily anyone who you agree with, but someone who has performed and produced the best results for their position, political party, political group, their movement, whatever it is. I will only take one nomination from each of you. Fiona, on you first. Your Politician of the Year 2020.
Well, because he's not a politician, I can't nominate Tony Holohan, but he's certainly the guy who's been most influential across the year. Mary Lou McDonald, for me, I mean, if a political party leader is there to deliver at election time, she did so in spades. 12 months ago, just in the wake of the Westminster elections, where Sinn Féin actually lost seats and lost credibility, you would have wondered if she was going to survive 2020. Yeah. Here she is at the end of the year, largest vote share in the election, just short of the largest number of seats. And then ultimately leader of the opposition. So, you know, considering the other two main political leaders who she was up against had bad elections, they lost ground, they lost vote share. That's why she gets the nod in that head-to-head battle.
I'd find it very difficult to disagree with that as well, particularly if you're looking at those three, because you might argue that, you know, you could say the leaders volunteered to do it themselves, but you might argue that she was the one who, to some degree, ended civil war politics by forcing Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin into coalition with each other. Christina, any other curveballs for you, or would you agree with that?
Yeah, I was looking over the list, you know, going through the different, I suppose, political stories over the year, and I think for me, Simon Harris comes out on top for me in terms of, he was in the health ministry. Everyone hates it. It's a poison chalice. You find yourself in a pandemic also dealing with health, and you still manage to come out with people relatively liking you. So I think that deserves some sort of recognition, because I think even now that we have Donnelly in the position, Simon Harris is still almost trumping Stephen Donnelly.
He's the people's health minister.
Exactly, you know, and he has spoken, I think, publicly about how difficult it was to give up the health ministry, which I don't think a lot of former politicians would admit to. I think most people are, you know, running out the door once they get a chance to get out of that job.
It's true. I suspect that if there were to be a renaissance or a rebirth of the year award, we could certainly give it to Simon Harris, because don't forget, this time last year, we were looking at the general election being triggered by no confidence in him. And yet look how things turned around. But I think on the grand scheme of things, and sorry, Christina, but two votes outweigh one, Mary Lou McDonald, our Politician of the Year 2020. And I think, although that's one you could argue till the cows come home, she certainly has made her mark this year. We will leave it at that. Thank you both very much for joining me on this Sunday between Christmas and New Year. Very much appreciate your time, and thank you so much for coming in. Christina Finn, political correspondent of the Journal.ie, and Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland editor with Independent Newspapers. Thank you both very much.